Blog Talk Radio.
Tuned into the No Romance Without Finance show. I'm your host, Brother Vernon Muhammad, and I have my good partner, my good brother, my good friend on the line with me. Brother Camos, are you there? I'll say it again. Perhaps he's muted. Brother Camos, you on with us? His line is open. He may be tied up in the middle of something right now, but he's on the line. He'll probably be joining us in a minute. In any case, we have something good lined up for you today. I want to thank my good sister, Gidget Muhammad, for helping me out and making sure that the show here on the Nation Building Network was in place and that we would be able to do what it is we do so well, which is bring enlightenment, particularly on this show, around the importance of economics, business, personal finance, and all the things that we need to take care of that will make life oh so much sweeter. So today we have a good one lined up for you. We're going to be discussing socially responsible business and the need for socially responsible business in our community. Okay? So we're going to define what socially responsible businesses are and why they're so important. We're going to look into different benefits that they bring to consumers and why it's important for you to support socially responsible businesses. If you realize that a company that you're spending money with monthly, weekly, or daily even is going to be putting money back into your community, is going to be supporting causes that are near and dear to your heart, and is going to be generally working to make the world that you live in a better place, then wouldn't it make sense to support companies and businesses like that even if you had to go out of your way a little bit, even if you had to put yourself at a slight disadvantage, sometimes it's worth it to, I guess, provide the fuel for that engine that you know is going to help and benefit the greater good than your simple convenience. You may live, you know, down the block from Walmart, and you know that Walmart is not necessarily the friend of small businesses or small communities, but it may be to your advantage, instead of just rolling out and going to Walmart for everything that you need, to drive a little bit further. Go to a different part of town where you know that the businesses or the entrepreneurs that you're going to support are actually going to support you, and reinvest some of those dollars that come from the profits back into your community, whether they're supporting your local Little League team, whether they're actually donating money to the schools in your district, whether they're you know, providing for additional health services, or whatever the case may be. Socially responsible business and the duty of businesses and entrepreneurs is something that we're going to take a look at, because we're aiming to revolutionize what we do in terms of our own personal economics, the way in which we think about money for ourselves, the way in which we approach money when dealing with one another, and how we can actually begin taking concrete steps to empowering ourselves, empowering our community, and making a difference. Because if you read the news, if you heard all the clamor and talk during the election season leading up to the election, you know that everybody in America, to some degree or another, was making the economy of the country a central focal point. And everyone was looking at what the Republicans would do to benefit and make a change and a difference in the economy, and everyone was looking at what the Democrats and President Obama would do to change and benefit and make a difference with the economy and the way that it's going, when the reality seems to be that it really doesn't matter who's in office. You know, I know a friend who just got the word that she was laid off, and to make it so bad, they gave it a word on Sunday. Who does that? But things like that happen. Doesn't matter if the Republicans are in office, doesn't matter if the Democrats are in office. The key to buffering, I guess, yourself against what's going on with the greater economy outside is unity, is cooperative economics, and doing business with businesses and with companies that are dedicated and committed to putting energy and putting resources back to benefit the consumers. So we're going to have a great discussion about that, and I hope that you all will join in on the discussion, because there's certainly going to be some steps that you all should take. Several months ago, we were on the air, and we actually issued a challenge. Sister Gidget Muhammad actually allowed us to come on her show, I believe it was, and while we were on there representing Freedom Paper Company, we issued a challenge to buy black. So make it a specific and deliberate point to put your dollars behind as many black-owned, black-operated companies as you can. Make it a specific point to do business with people in your own community. And I use that term loosely. If you've heard previous shows over the last couple of weeks, you know that the idea of community, at least with me, is something that I take issue with, because I really believe that we don't have a community. We have to develop a community of our own. That was a big, big and wonderful discussion on last week's show. So making sure that you're putting the energy into businesses and ventures that you know are central to your livelihood, your way of life, your daily routine, you know, businesses that are likely to support and contribute back to your church, your mosque, the place of worship, the school where your children go. Think about that when you hear the term socially responsible business, and see if you can come up with and find any of the businesses that you know of that really are socially responsible. There may be some big name, big box companies that do a little something. I heard that there was some major airline, and once a month they would give $500 in scholarship money or something like that to some cause. Now, you think major airlines, they've got to be pulling in hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars on a yearly basis. And even if they're losing, you know, money, even if they're losing millions, doesn't seem like $500 in a month's time is really a significant contribution from a company like a major airline. And we know that some of them have trouble. Some of them, you know, I think there was one major one earlier this year that had to file bankruptcy. Doesn't mean that they didn't have any money. Doesn't mean that they were totally broke. But still in all, the idea that, you know, major corporation like that is giving $500 toward a cause when it could obviously do a lot more says a lot. So we want to identify, if we can, some closer to the ground, closer to home businesses that we can highlight, we can identify, and we can begin supporting, because we know that that support will come back to us and benefit us in so many different ways. So, again, I thank you for joining us. If you want to join in on the discussion, the phone number is 646-716-5971. Sister Gidget, is that you on the line out here in the background?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Vernon.
Wa alaikum salam, my good sister. How are you feeling this evening?
I am fine, considering.
Considering.
I haven't had any sleep in about 48 hours, but hey, I'm still here.
All right. No telling what you're going to come up with tonight, huh?
Well, I was listening to you talk, you know, and I was wondering, did you have at your immediate disposal any ideas of when we talk about community development, those businesses that are essential in our communities, because maybe it could give someone an idea of what we actually need to start focusing on as being, you know, becoming entrepreneurs and actually creating businesses that are going to be highly used and greatly beneficial to the community. So, you know, because I was thinking, you know, we always think about grocery stores and clinics and things like that, but, you know, we have to think about, like, mechanic shops and cleaners and, you know, we're always talking about, you know, barbershops, salons, but when we talk about community, you know, those things can be very essential in the community so that we can stay within our community and not have to gravitate outward, and also possibly looking at some people being wholesale distributors, you know, for like electronics and things that we always have to go outside of our community to get. So I was just wondering, did you have a list of things that you thought would be essential in a community?
You know, I've been, I say it over and over again on this and on these shows, but that idea, that topic has been heavy on my mind for the greater part of this year. You know, and anywhere I can and with anyone I can, I've been trying to make that a point of discussion. You know, I think that's very important because we're planning our future. And honestly, business entrepreneurship is going to become more and more of a vital part of our survival. You know, you don't have the mind to get your hustle on and to find alternative routes to make sure that you have your bases covered and you're providing for what's needed. You're going to find yourself short more often than not. So, yeah, definitely am looking forward to what comes up in this conversation about what businesses I would deem essential. I would start, honestly. I think it's a good idea to start, instead of reinventing the wheel, start with the businesses and the places that you already spend your money on the regular. At least you can identify those businesses and those, I was going to say patrons, those entities that you're spending money with that either will be for you and will begin to turn in your direction, so that instead of just taking money from you and from your community, they're willing to at least turn that back around and make a contribution to the the surrounding neighborhood, the surrounding community, and the people in that neighborhood and that community. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. If you notice that, I had a friend of mine who, whenever there were particular times of year when it was time to kind of, go out and do community activist type work, and she wouldn't hesitate to make it a point to always approach the neighborhood supermarket. You know, we usually think about the supermarket is where people go to spend money, and, that's just what you do. You give them all the money and get what you can get from them. But it used to amaze me how several times during the year she just go to the supermarket and get so much stuff when it was time to make contributions to feed the homeless during different drives or at Thanksgiving time. She would actually go and get turkeys, and not just a few turkeys. She would get tens of dozens of turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And all types of stuff like that, So you can look at those places that you go on the regular. You mentioned barbershops, you mentioned hair salons and things like that. Those are smaller entrepreneurs, usually supermarkets like a chain, and they have corporate giving departments and whatnot that set aside a small percentage during certain times of the year. But, integral part of the community, like the hair salon, like the maybe not the high overhead type businesses, because a lot of the smaller businesses are struggling, just like all the rest. But the professionals in your neighborhood, doctors, dentists, people who provide valuable and vital resources, go ahead and break a tooth and see if anything matters other than finding a dentist. Make the dentist your friend. Treat them right and establish a working relationship with them, because they're highly likely to support things that are important to you. I know that there are plenty of dentists and doctors that support Little League teams and youth activities and things of that nature. In addition to that, you would probably really have to dig and find out what the profile of a company or a business is about. If you want to find out if they're big on giving back, if they're big on supporting the community and being there to make a contribution for the community. I mentioned dentists. There are some dentists and doctors' offices who set a certain portion of their time and their efforts aside so that once a month or once a week or whatever it is, they know that they're going to do at least one patient, whatever is needed, for free. So if somebody really comes in and they know that they need to have health care, and it's a matter of insurance or it's a matter of what you can afford out of your pocket, you have some dentists that are like, I'll pull half your tooth, and when you come back with the rest of the money, I'll pull the other half. But if you get a good one, they'll take care of you. That's what they're in the community to do, to take care of the health and the well-being of the patients, of the public. Teachers are another group that, even though you don't think of them as a business, they give back. They give so much, and in many instances, that goes unrewarded. But if you think about the idea of public schools, not public schools, private schools, or even religious schools, you know, in your community or in your neighborhood, many of them have a much more open and community-oriented approach than the traditional public school system or, you know, traditional schools. If you find entities that are not the norm, okay, and I use that like I'm trying to say that like the public, the charter schools and the private schools as opposed to the public schools, the ones that are independent, they have more of a vested interest in the community, whereas the public school is just there. You know, it's always going to be there. They're going to get their funding from the state, and, you know, whether they make a contribution or not,
right,
there it is. So trying to identify those vital pieces that are in your community and looking at not necessarily what resources they can put in, because sometimes that community support, that socially responsible aspect comes in time support. You know, there may be those schools, daycare, private school, that are lenient on the tuition policies, or they make sure that with the money that are generated from tuition, they can give scholarships. Things like that. You have to, in many instances, you have to inquire of the business or of the entity that's in your community what it is they do, what they can offer, and what programs they have in place that signify them giving back to the community. So you know, it takes a little legwork, takes a little homework, but we can dig and we can find and we can identify who's really on our side and who's willing to help.
Right. And so, what would your approach be, you know, like if you were starting out, what would your approach be to surrounding businesses in the community? Like, for instance, there are some small businesses that are not suffering. Like, for instance, the hair care store in our community, which is, of course, not ran by us, not owned by us. Excuse me, but we are the customer. Then you have the local convenience store that really reaps a lot of our money because they're in our community. It's not necessarily their people, you know, gravitating to their store to support them, but it's basically us. So how would we approach those people?
You know, that highlights a very big problem that's going on among Black people throughout America, really. You know, other ethnic enclaves and communities seem to understand that. They have to get it together. They have to pool their resources. They have to make sure that their money all flows in one direction, or at least in the same direction, so that they can leverage that. We don't seem to get that point. And one of the things that really, I think, needs to happen if we find out that many of the places we go to really won't contribute to our well-being or won't support the community the way the community supports the community the way the community supports their business, is we've got to realize that, or a good place to start is to find ways to galvanize and get people on board and create blocks of consumers, create people that are all kind of on the same page. If you realize that the place you're going to is giving you subpar goods and services and they're charging you too much, then yeah, you may have to all make some noise in a common voice at one common time. But make some noise in a big way so that they realize it. But now that I say that, I want to highlight something that really I hope I can see us grow beyond in our lifetime, because we don't seem to be able to do it right. Used to be a time when boycott meant something. You know, if you were spending your money somewhere, there was a time when we realized that our economic energy going into particular bus companies or going into certain school systems or whatever the business or the entity is, there was a time when we realized that if we all stop spending our money with these people or with this particular business, then we can affect change. We don't get that nowadays. You know, people call for a boycott too often, and, you know, there may be a picket line or a boycott movement out in front of a business, and the other half of the community is just going right into the business, ignoring the call for boycott. So it used to be an effective strategy, and I don't know, it just doesn't seem to work as well anymore, because, you know, nobody thinks about it. If we say nobody buy gas on Thursday, everybody will go and fill up on Wednesday. Get them all that money on Wednesday instead of, it just doesn't make any sense anymore, you know. Rather than take that gas, rather than take that money, say, okay, we're not spending it at this gas station anymore. Let's only spend with this company or with this gas station over here, you know. I don't know. That's something that it really is going to take a lot of galvanizing to do. And sadly enough, I think that it's a generational thing. So it really is going to have to go along the lines of educating younger consumers, which everybody gets. Again, everybody gets but us. Because the big corporations, the big companies, mm-hmm. they're targeting future generations, okay? The whole purpose behind Ronald McDonald and the Hamburglar and Grimace and all of that, they didn't care about the aging baby boomers. They wanted the people in our generation who would grow up and be hooked on McDonald's for the next 20 or 30 years. You know, the whole purpose behind, I don't even know who's out there now, Charmin and the Bear family, you know, they want to catch the attention of children now and just cement into their minds that, hey, when you think of toilet tissue, think of Charmin, you know. So
right.
Other companies and other entities know and understand that you got to educate consumers and you got to educate the next generation of consumers so that in the future, you know, all of that, those dollars are going into your, you know, your coffer where you want them to go. But I think that what it's going to take now is just a conscious commitment, kind of like the couple from Chicago did with the Empowerment Project in 2011, at the beginning of 2011, I think it was. They just made a commitment that for 1 year, they and their family were only going to spend money with black-owned businesses. And they went, everything they could possibly think of where it was, you know, no possible way, unless there was no possible way around it, they did everything that they could to spend their money with people of color, particularly with black-owned businesses. It's going to take just radical solutions like that. And that's something that Minister Farrakhan said recently in his address when he was talking about what's ailing America and what it's going to take to really fix some of the problems. It's really going to take something radical. And something like that, you know, making the decision to only spend your money with people who are going to benefit you and benefit your community, that is kind of radical. You know, that's out-of-the-box thinking. But, you know, there's a saying, mediocre minds talk about people and small minds talk about people, mediocre minds talk about events and things, and superior minds or brilliant minds, you know, focus on ideas. Well, here's an idea. Even though it's easier to go to the local supermarket, even though it's easier to go to Target and Walmart for everything you need. Take a year. Challenge yourself. Don't spend money there with them. Find smaller merchants. Find merchants that care about you and your community. Seek them out. Search them out. And only spend your money with them.
So what about, I mean, you know, I know I've asked this question before, and I'm not sure if it was on your show or on another show, but, you know, what about the national database for black businesses? I mean, we have so many directories that, you know, black business owners can list their businesses in, and they might be in there with, you know, 10,000 other small, you know, black business owners. But what about a national directory? And do you think that we should, people who are in small businesses should, you know, not only start seeking customers locally, but maybe get contracts or arrangements with, like, FedEx and UPS so that we can start being more proactive in shipping our goods to other cities if in the event that they can't find another black business owner that is offering the same product that, say, I'm offering, and I'm the closest person to them, but I'm in Texas and they're in Oklahoma. So, I mean, is that something that we should be looking at? And what about that development of the national black database?
That's a big and monumental undertaking. You ever heard the term herding cat?
No, sir. I'm not that old, Brother Vernon.
Well, way back in the day, there used to be a thing about herding cats. Like if you were a cattle herder or something like that, you know, you're a cowboy on a horse, you can, you know, herd buffalo or herd cows and bulls and whatnot. But the idea of actually trying to round up cats and get them all to go into the ranch, you know, that just seems so ridiculous. I think it's good that on local level, in some parts of the country, you can find some black databases. You can find some black businesses that, you know, have all gotten together and, you know, made it a point to highlight themselves and be listed all in one place, so that as more and more people are starting to wake up and look for black businesses, you know, we can now find directories that are popping up in different places. But that's like you know, thinking that there's going to be one national system, I think we're too early on for that. Maybe when we get to our grandchildren's generation, you know, that maybe they'll get it right. But it's going to take a while before we all get on the same page like that. I think that there's a gentleman, George Frazier. I first found out about him on the State of the Union addresses that Tavis Smiley used to do, State of the Black Union addresses. He was on there, I think, at least 1 year when it was highlighted. I think back then it was highlighted that black spending power was at $750 billion a year, you know, three-quarters of a trillion. Now it's up over $1.2 trillion a year that black people, you know, are putting into the economy, are spending, earning and spending, but very little of that is spent with black businesses. So one of his biggest things is network, 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 network. Everywhere you go, make it your responsibility to seek out, search out who these black businesses and black entrepreneurs are, so that at least you have your own database. You know, if nobody's going to provide it for you, we've got to get ourselves in the frame of mind searching out black businesses. The good thing is, as I said, you know, locally, you can find more and more of these directories. So I've got a buddy up in New York, not New York, in Philadelphia, Norm Bond from Norm Bond Marketing, and the National Alliance of Marketing Directors. He's putting together, this December, he's putting together a Buy Black Festival. I think it's their 11th year that they're doing it, but They called together black businesses from all up and down the East Coast and, you know, maybe in other parts of America too. But they do a one-day event, which this year is going to be December 8th. And they just showcase as many of the black-owned businesses as they can, from small-time, you know, local artisans and people who make crafts, you know, with the hands, artists, and, you know, people who make hand-woven coats and hats and scarves, to, you know, big-name companies. This year, Freedom Paper Company is going to be featured there as the only black-owned and operated personal paper care products type of business. The only black-owned company that is producing a line of bathroom tissue, paper towels, trash bags, things of that nature. You know, it's important to know stuff like that. But I think the best that we can do right now is to find out those type of events and festivals that are geared toward Buy Black. They're doing a great job at educating the masses of the people about that movement, you know, redirecting those dollars back to the black community. And also, one of the things that you can do is, for whatever city or town or maybe state you're in, do a search, go to Google or go to Bing and search for Black Chamber of Commerce. That's another organized body of business owners that are in the various cities and states that are just taking it upon themselves to kind of form a kind of union or association that's strictly about business. And the common denominator there is that they're all black owned. Maybe one day there'll be a linking up all those businesses, maybe the Urban League and the Nation of Islam and the NAACP will all get together and on the same page and, you know, actually pull together all those resources at once. But, you know, I think we may be a long way off from that. I hope we do see it in our lifetime, though.
Well, you know how I am. I think everything is possible if we put our minds to it, so.
No doubt. No doubt about that. Let's see. Some of the questions that we raised in the description of the show is what kind of incentive is in it for the business owners and the community? What actually is the benefit to socially responsible businesses being in our community? How does it benefit the business owners first and foremost? So for those of you who are listening out there, if you do own a business, how can giving back, you know, think about what you can come up with to give away. Sometimes you give because it will allow you to receive more. But think about what it is you offer. What's your service? What's your product? What goods are you trading in? What do you have that you can give to the community that will reap you a greater return? That's how I think the business owners need to think. When your customers feel that they're actually getting more value than what they're paying, you've got, number one, you've got loyal customers, and number two, you've got customers that are likely to spend more money with you. There's a such thing called the upsell. You know, it's very possible that you get a customer who comes in for one thing, you can get them to purchase that one thing and something else. And many times you can, you know, get people to purchase a whole lot more. I know who hasn't gone to the supermarket for one thing and come out with a basket full of stuff and said, I don't even think I got what I came here for. You know, so there are businesses that specialize in that. They make sure that you see something else that you might want and would love to get in addition to what you already had in mind. So that can be a benefit to the business owners. If you are really, really showing that you care about your customers and care about the community that you are doing your business in, if they feel that you are actually putting in as opposed to just taking out, you can definitely look forward to a long and healthy tenure in that community. How doing business with socially responsible businesses, how supporting socially responsible businesses in your community benefits you, you know, as a consumer, as someone who's spending money. I go back to the old school. I can remember times when, you know, my going to the store with my grandmother, you know, if she was a little bit short or something wasn't right, or even if, you know, she happened to walk out without the money, they would allow her to go ahead and take it and bring the money back later on, get the goods now and pay for it later. You know, that goes along with the whole, you know, getting more than you bargained for, more than you paid for. When things like that happen, when you make it a point to seek out businesses that really do care, then they, you know, you benefit because they extend that care, they extend that service. They give you more than what you're paying for. That's what you want, as opposed to, oh, let's say, credit card companies that are fleecing you. You're doing business with them. You know, they're telling you, oh, don't worry about it. Here, use this, and you can pay at a later date. Well, they're going to charge you the price that you're, you know, you think you're paying, plus more money. They're taking money from you. So that's not actually a beneficial relationship. That's not socially conscious business. That's taking you for a sucker. We got to stop doing business with entities like that and start looking for more ways where business is not so much about just sucking us dry, but business is about a mutually beneficial relationship where each wants the other to stick around as long as we can. You know, I've been to mechanics. Mechanics where I know that whatever it was they were trying to tell me needed to be done to my car was not actually the case, and they were just trying to sucker me or fleece me by getting as much as they can out of me for just that moment. Now, because I was alert and at least I knew about that particular or those particular instances, you know, I was able to stop that. You know, telling them, well, you put my daggone engine back together the same way it was when I came in here, and I drove away and ended up getting nothing. You know, so that's one way that not being socially responsible in terms of business can hurt or harm you, because if somebody catches you and your business practices are out of ethics, or, you know, you're kind of breaking some kind of moral code between the consumer and the people that they're going to patronize, if you're taking advantage of the consumer, you're going to lose. You're really going to lose out. And that's why there are so many consumer advocacy groups out there. You know, what is that big magazine, Consumer Reports? They'll let you know, you know, what the real deal on some of these products and some of these companies are. Because if you find somebody that's really just trying to rip you off, would you continue and go ahead and spend your money with them anyway? I don't think so.
Right.
So that's one of the ways that we can look at finding the incentive to the business owners and to the community in doing business with socially responsible businesses. Let's look at some of the programs that can be developed to help the community grow in this way. Look at some of the actual programs that have been put out there under the guise and in the name of being socially responsible. And for that, I'll actually go ahead and give a moment to talk about our sponsor for the No Romance Without Finance show, Freedom Paper Company. One of the integral part of Freedom Paper Company is their community incentive and their organizational incentive program. Now, for those of you who don't know, Freedom Paper Company is a distributor of paper products, bathroom tissue, paper towels, paper cups, you know, forks, knives, dinner napkins, stuff like that. One of the incentive programs that they have is called an organizational incentive. It's geared around the bathroom tissue. Everyone in every community, everywhere, just about uses bathroom tissue. There may be some special characters that don't use bathroom tissue, but for the most part.
I hope not.
Well, you'd be surprised.
Oh, God.
There are some people are special. There are groups, for example, churches, mosques, schools, where large bodies of membership all go and participate regularly. You know, the activity is focused around a central location. Well, the organizational incentive that Freedom Paper Company offers would take a church, for instance, where there may be 100 members, there may be 3,000 members, who, however many there are. If they loyally support Freedom Paper Company and Freedom Bathroom Tissue as their brand of choice, then quarterly, depending on how much business they do, depending on how much of the product is actually moved through that particular group, that particular organization, they're eligible for not only rebates that come back to the consumers based on the volume that they've actually generated in business, but any causes or fundraising efforts or anything like that. The company itself takes a proactive role in setting aside some of the profits in a profit sharing program and actually putting that back into that organization. So imagine, again, a church with a building fund. What church don't have a building fund, right?
Right.
After a whole year, if that church is only purchasing Freedom bathroom tissue to go in its bathroom, and all of the members are purchasing Freedom bathroom tissue to go into their home, then you have an organization that is creating a very large amount of revenue under the guise of cooperative economics. Then that's a mutually beneficial relationship between the customers and the company. Not just because the customer gets some bathroom tissue and they can go handle their business, but it's mutually beneficial because they're patronizing the company. The company is growing in terms of the business that it does, but the company also takes some of those profits and puts it right back into the account for that church, the bank account for that church. So all of the members benefit. Same way it would happen with a school. Schools have, there's an additional benefit to schools because same possibility exists, you know. They have the opportunity to buy as a cooperative, as a group, you know, everybody coming together for one common cause. If we all buy this particular brand of bathroom tissue, then we know that we're generating a particular, gross product. We're generating a particular amount of revenue. And because schools, for the most part, are either based on cost, which is how they allow students to come in, sometimes they have tuition that is paid, or there are actually other materials and programs that can be funded through the generation of revenue like that. So there are different income streams that are set up specifically to benefit schools and membership organizations like that. Cooperative economics has to become a reality in our community and among us as a people. And we should expect businesses to arrange themselves and formulate themselves so that they're not just looking to take money out, but a regular part of what businesses do is put money back in. So that's one of the highlights of Freedom Paper Company and what we call the Freedom Economic Movement. okay? It revitalizes communities that were hit hardest in some instances by what's going on with the economy of the country. You know, when people started talking about recession and you know, how bad things were, and everyone else is talking about furloughs and layoffs and downsizing and modernization and all of that, the solution to that is creating a viable alternative to the economy that you see. If where you're already pouring your money is kind of like a bucket with a hole in it, then you got to stop pouring your money into that bucket. Redirect those dollars to go somewhere else. Redirect those dollars into the companies that are going to begin to pour money back into what you need. Community gardens. Imagine supporting companies that fund and support community gardens. So where we know that there are either food deserts and supermarkets are moving out of our neighborhoods, you now have companies that you support that will actually begin to grow good, healthy food right in your neighborhood, in your community, that you can benefit from. They do it for the benefit of the community. I was talking to a friend of mine who said that a school and some grocery store and some other entity kind of all got together and did that in Harlem, of all places, in Harlem, New York. There's a big, large community garden that's taking place, you know, in and around this school. That's a good example of socially responsible business. The people who are generating all this wealth for these business owners are seeing a return, because the business owners and the places where the people are spending money are going about making sure that good, healthy food is now growing right in the middle of the community, right in the middle of the neighborhood. That's a beautiful thing, and that's something that we should look to see more of. So let me check the line. I see we have a couple of callers who are on the line, but no one is actually looking to raise a hand and join the conversation.
Maybe we need to call them out, Brother Vernon. There go one.
Should we call some people out? I wonder. Yeah, there is one that just opened up. Caller from 770 area code. Your mic is open. Who's this?
Assalamu alaikum, sir. This is Brother Jihad, beloved. Just shouting out to you.
Brother Jihad, thank you all so much, my good brother. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum. How you feeling?
Brother, I'm fine. Thank a lot, brother. Just listening to the show and sitting back trying to learn a little something, because, you know, this is not one of my subjects, so I'm just trying to sit back and learn from you, brother.
I hear you, brother. I hear you.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Jihad.
Alaikum salam, ma'am. How are you?
I am fine, by Allah's grace. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate you calling in, Brother Jihad. Let me ask you a question, Brother Jihad. What is important to you in terms of where you go and spend your money? What makes the difference between whether you choose to spend your money in business A or whether you want to go down the road and spend your money with business B? What makes the difference?
I look for quality. And so for me, it doesn't make a difference where I go. The quality is what I'm always after. Like, you know, I'm a clothes man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I like the Italian cut suits, things like that. So I'm basically a quality type guy, and I really don't really look into where I invest in it. I drive a BMW. I mean, you know, I can care less if the Germans make it. I just like the quality of the car. So for me, that's my attractive power, is the quality of what I'm purchasing.
Gotcha. Now, say for instance, you had, Italian suit maker. Let's say you're a Versace man. You know, I got the feeling that you look good in a Versace suit, brother. I just, you know, you sound like that. You know, you and Giorgio Bruttini might have something, you know. Y'all might have some, you know, some relation that isn't as obvious as it would seem there. But
yes, sir. Well, Atlanta's a flossy type place, Mike. So everything is kind of blingish down here a little bit. So little vanity plays a part, you know, but that's Atlanta.
I understand. When in Rome, do as the Romans do, huh?
Absolutely.
I understand. All right, now, ask me this. Because we're talking about socially responsible business, let's just say, there's a suit designer. Maybe he's not from Italy. Maybe he's right there in Atlanta. Suit designer will give you tailor-made suits just as good quality. You know, same worsted wool, and, you know, three pleats in the pants, and, you know, what do you call that cup that's in the hem of the pants? It's not a French cup, right? The French cup is the sleeves, right?
Right, right.
With the, you know, that cup that comes, some people call it a lawyer's cup, but the cup in the pants. You know, you can do, the designer that's there in Atlanta can do all that. But in addition to doing all that, that one makes sure that a certain percentage of the sale of every suit goes for independent local education, independent schools that can produce superior products in the public school system. The suits are conservative, you know, they don't get all flashy and, you know, bling-blingish, but, you know, good quality suits. And in addition to that, they've got that aspect. They've got a purpose to their party.
Right.
Would it make a difference, or are you just loyal to the brand?
No, it would make a difference. You know, like I was told that, for example, that one bank in Miami that our original brothers and sisters down there invest in has more purchase power to it, or money invested in that one bank, than all the black banks in America put together.
Wow.
So, you know, I think it is important where you spend your money. I really do think it's important because, you know, as the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we were always taught to do something for ourselves. So it does make a difference. It's just that for me, there are products that you can only get unless you go to certain communities that are just purchasing that. Like, for example, how the Koreans have just locked down on the market of the weave.
Hmm.
You know, they've got it on lock. I mean, you want to weave, I mean, you're going to go buy the hair from them. I mean, that's just a matter of fact. And I think a lot of people didn't really take a look at, okay, we're making just one particular group of people more powerful with it. And we didn't really look to see if they were going to spend their money, invest that money that we gave them back in our community. We just didn't look at it that way. We were just looking at, they got a product that I want, and I'm going to invest in that product. But it does make a difference. For example, like the tax dollars that we spend, some of that money goes to Israel. A lot of people don't even really care. They just know that at the end of the year, we got to pay our taxes. Nobody protests about where the money's going.
Right.
You know, so I think a lot of us have become, another way to look at this is a lot of us have become what we call 85% as we worship that which we know not what. We invest in that which we know not what, where it came from, who got it, who's doing what with what. We really don't look at it that way because we have become, the black community have become a consumer nation. And that's the bottom line. We are a consumer nation. We're used to somebody else telling us how to spend our money, where to spend our money, and we've just become accustomed to that.
You know, that that sounds a lot like things are going to hinge on principle. Sounds like a lot of what happens in our future really is going to hinge on principle.
Right.
There's the previous generations, you know, our generation, older generations, the principle of, look, we got to stick together, do for self, and I don't care if we do get the opportunity to go and, you know, use the white man's ice. I don't care. I'm just using the black man's ice. You know, principle of the matter.
Right.
It seems like that's lost, that has been lost on generations up till now. At least once segregation was kind of done away with, once integration, I should say, came into play, was added into the mix, once integration was introduced, the principle of stick together, the principle of we must do it for ourselves, and we are a common unity. That went away. So that is what, when Sister Gidget asked that question, you know, what's it going to take for us to get it together and make a difference? I don't think that the principle is going to take root unless we focus on the next generation. You got to educate the consumers. And now, you know, after they looked at the baby boomer market as the largest market that you could target, the next generation, you know, what do they call it? The millennial babies, ones that grew up. There has been an internet ever since they were born. You know,
right.
They're being targeted and targeted heavily by these major corporations and major producer of consumer goods. I think that if we are going to look at any kind of change taking place for ourselves and our businesses or across the board for us as a people, that principle has to take root in and among the babies. And if we don't take an active role in educating them and in shaping their thinking as it relates to self and, you know, that common unity and sticking together and looking out for themselves, just like every other ethnic group around the world understands you have to do, then I really don't see that happening. I think it's just like you're saying, you know, we don't get it, and it's that principle is just lost on us.
Yes, sir. And, you know, Brother Vernon, I would like to say that what it's going to take is going to take a law continuously breaking the power of those that are in charge right now. And that's what's going to make us begin to look. Unfortunately, it could create a lot of casualties in our community when it comes to that, because at that particular point, it's almost like too late. But
yeah.
I think it's going to take that. I think it's going to take Allah breaking the power, with the calamities and the wars and things of that nature, just breaking his power base where he's broke and penniless, where he will be smoking $1,000 bills, rolling them up and smoking them like cigars. I think it's going to take that, unfortunately for us, before we get the hint that we need to get up and do something for ourselves. But I think at that particular point, if it gets to that point, I think it could create a lot of casualties in our community, and I would hope it doesn't come to that, but it seems like it's coming to that.
You know, that's the I like to run scenarios in my mind, and that's literally one of the only scenarios that I can't see any other way around. I think you're absolutely right. People are comfortable. People are good. You know, you ask people how they're doing, I'm all right. You know, as long as people are all right, nothing's going to change.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, as you're saying, the casualties, you know, if you are dependent on eating from people who are feeding you poison, what do you think is going to happen? You know, what's the only possible outcome of that? If you're
right.
dependent on people who are only going to feed you, are your only source for what it is you need, and they all of a sudden can't provide for you anymore, what option do you have?
Right.
You either
right.
are going to face extinction, or you're finally going to get it and begin to create a reality for yourself. And I'm honestly, you know, I understand the way that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is going out into the community and not necessarily preaching to the community, but going out and just giving them love. You know, at this point, they're going to need us in the future.
Right.
And he's so wise in seeing that the best thing we can do with them is just extend love to them so that when that time comes, they know exactly who to run to, who to turn to. Because
mm-hmm.
everybody else has failed them, and nobody else has extended a call and extended a loving hand and a loving embrace to them. So when it's time and they're ready,
right, I agree. I agree.
That's an amazing scenario to see, and I hope and I pray that, you know, we can heed the signs, heed the call, and straighten up and begin to move ourselves into a position where instead of being forced to need one another and forced to look for alternatives, we can begin to think in terms of those alternatives now while we have a chance to do it voluntarily, because I guarantee you that if you are forced to depend on somebody to save your life and y'all wasn't tight and y'all wasn't cool before, it's not going to be any easier to do it then.
Right, right. I agree. Well, so, brother, I'm glad I had an opportunity to call in and chime in. And what else you gonna be talking about tonight?
I appreciate that, brother. Thank you for giving us the time. We're gonna wrap it up in not too much longer. We only got about 25 more minutes. I'm probably gonna go for another 15, and then we'll wrap it up and see what we have coming up for the rest of the week.
Yes,
you
sir.
Have. I know that you're gonna be on Tuesday. Why don't you give us a heads up into what you have in store for Tuesday evening?
Well, Tuesday is a very interesting show. We're still on Building a Nation of Our Own, Part 3. We're talking about creating peace and bridging the gap of disunity and creating unity in our community. But we're taking a different spin on it. I actually have two of some of the great commanders in the field under the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who have actually run armies for the minister in the Nation of Islam. We're going to come in. It's going to be a good night. Men talk with some of the great captains of our nation. Dealing with things from the perspective of, you know, a lot of our sisters, you know, they don't really know. There's a lot of sisters that have casualties as far as relationships go. We're going to bring some men on that have helped the Honorable Louis Farrakhan train men to make them good fathers, to make them good husbands, good providers, and soldiers for their community, men that can actually go out and create peace. We're bringing men in who actually train men for the Nation of Islam and then let the people call in and get a chance to talk to them so they can see what makes Brother Vernon different than Leroy or Gilroy down the street or Ray Ray and the fellas in the hood. What makes Brother Vernon different? He doesn't smoke, he doesn't drink, he doesn't get high, he doesn't run through the women. Well, what makes him different? It's the captains of the Nation of Islam and the training that they give the men that makes the FOI a very special entity in our community. So we want to bring some of the captains on from the field to let people get a chance to talk to them to see just what makes an FOI tick from that perspective.
That sounds exciting. I hope that we get a lot of these single mothers with sons. I hope that they can, you know, influence or convince their sons, whatever you have to do to get them to tune in. Make
yes,
sure
sir.
That they're tuned into that show. That's too valuable an opportunity to miss.
Yes, sir.
So I thank you, good brother. I appreciate
you
for that. And I'll definitely be looking out for that Tuesday night bombshell that you're going to drop.
Oh, yeah, brother, because you know you're the backbone of the show, brother. We don't do nothing without Brother Vernon.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad that we got a network and a system where we work together, brother. So it's
yes,
a pleasure. Nation building, as Sister Gidget said, one nation, one love. So we got
one
a
nation,
mission.
Nation, one love,
hand.
Brother. May Allah bless you, sir.
You too, my brother. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam.
All right. We got another caller calling in from the 678 area code. Atlanta is on fire tonight. 678, you are on the air with the No Romance Without Finance show. Who's this?
Hi, salam alaikum. This is Sister Keisha.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How is everyone?
Doing all right. Doing great. What do you have to say? What thoughts do you have about socially responsible business in our community, sis?
Actually, I wanted to make a comment. I was reading an article that the NAACP put out. The name of the article is Know Your Worth. If we don't know, we can't grow our community. And in the article, it says that we must stop massive leakage of our money out of our communities. Currently, a dollar circulates in Asian communities for a month, in Jewish communities approximately 20 days, in white communities 17 days. How long does a dollar circulate in the black community? 6 hours. African Americans' buying power is $1.1 trillion, and yet only 2 cents of every dollar of African Americans spend in this country goes to black-owned businesses. So it is so very vital to create wealth for us as individuals and to grow our businesses, not just to have a small mom and pop, but we can grow to change and actually do takeovers as well, where businesses are existing. If we have businesses that support the community and also have them structured in a way where they're providing the goods and services for the individuals of the community. And it's so very important for our economic wealth and development that we circulate our black dollars within the community, and that takes businesses providing and being socially aware as well.
You know, you just raised a good point. It's something that I thought about a few days ago, and I actually saw it in action today. And I couldn't wait until I got an opportunity to discuss it in a public forum. The idea of actually circulating the dollar. Have you ever been in an environment where everybody was selling something? Everybody was selling something, but nobody wanted to spend. Imagine that. Everybody's looking to sell what they have to sell, but they don't want to buy from anybody else. Imagine going to one of those, holiday bazaars. Nobody's walking around actually spending money. Everybody's, offering you something, hoping that you'll spend your money with them. That's interesting. We can't be successful with that mindset, with that attitude of only taking. That's just what this show is about. Socially responsible businesses have the mindset that part of doing business is giving back, is putting some of those dollars that you make right back into the place where they came from. Spending your money as a business, spending your money among the consumers. If you profit, if you make a sale, then put a portion of that sale back into the marketplace. It's ridiculous that we, walk around being that tight in our own so-called community. We can't get far like that. We're not going to go anywhere. We're not going to really get up and off the ground until we do what I saw on the flip side, on the alternative. I saw one brother who was selling particular items. He went ahead and he spent what he had to spend to buy from one merchant. And then that very same merchant came back and took a portion of what he made and purchased from the first one, because they both had something to offer. They both had something to sell. They both had something that they knew the other needed. If our aim and intention is just to get the dollar and run right out and go give it to the enemies of our eyes, or go give it to, the same people that we got the dollar from, we still don't make it anywhere. We still don't get ahead. So that, circulating the dollar, was right on point. I love that idea. And I'm hoping that that's something that we can start to drive home and become a part of our culture. I would love to see just a festival where the aim and intention is just to see how many times we can keep the dollar going. As soon as I spend the money with somebody else, they're going to go spend it with somebody else in the room, and we're just going to keep that going all night long until eventually I get everything I need, and I end up, with the same dollars that I spent back in my pocket. Imagine that. You spend money and make money and spend money and make money and spend money and make money so much in one night, in one room, that you end up with a whole bunch of goods and a whole bunch of products in your bag, and at the end of the night you end up with the same dollars that you spent initially, because everybody that you spent dollars with, they turn right back around and they spend it with you. Imagine that.
And, Brother Ronald, I also wanted to to add that, you know, we can also, you know, our generation, I'm not going to say our generation is lost, but I'm just saying that we're getting such a late start. But we can also start teaching our children and our grandchildren of how to circulate our dollars in the community now. So, inshallah, by the time that they're our age, that economy is actually flourishing, and it's not something that is foreign as it is to us today.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I joke around, and I tell people all the time that my retirement plan is the next generation. You know, on one hand, I'm joking, but on the other hand, I'm really serious about that. You know, if we can teach the babies, teach them right, then the way that they practice what we're talking about, that will actually take care of their needs, but it will also ingrain the idea of them taking care of everyone else around them, especially their elders, their parents, their grandparents. You know, right now, unfortunately, so many of us are on our own. You know, our parents may live in another state, and thank God that they may be still of working age or able to do it for themselves. But if the need arose and they really needed us to carry them, you know, how possible would that be? There are many people who, you know, that would be a possibility. That would cause a major collapse. That would be a catastrophe, because no one is really expecting, or no one really expected and prepared for the idea that, oh, I'll be taking care of myself and my own needs, but also taking care of those who are around me as well. Again,
right.
We weren't thinking community-minded back then, and we certainly need to get on that bandwagon in terms of thinking community-minded now.
Right. And, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, that is an education that we're going to have to actually give our children, because, of course, no one in the public school system or higher institutions of learning is going to inform them of that. And so we really have to start implementing homeschooling, even if it's in addition to public schooling. Just reconditioning the mind of our children, even our college-age children who are being groomed to, you know, go out and get a job in corporate America and, you know, work 30 years for someone else. We still have the power to condition their minds and put them on the path of entrepreneurship and put them make them aware, you know, raise their consciousness to what we need to do as a people in our own community. So it's not too late even for those that are in college now or just exiting college.
I love that idea. I really love that idea. And, you know, I talked with when Brother Jihad was on, I mentioned the idea about us being forced to do some things as opposed to just willingly making the choice to do it. Fortunately or unfortunately, I think fortunately, many of the college students are in that position today. They're being forced. They're coming out of college. There's no place for them to go. So they're in that think or swim scenario, you know, and they can't just latch on to a good job and a position that would allow them to pay off much of the debt they've accumulated in getting those degrees and still be able to provide for themselves and make a living. I think that's a good place to be in. Sometimes when you've got your back against the wall or if you're between a rock and a hard place, the only thing you can do is succeed and make a way for yourself. So I love that. And another idea that was raised tonight by Sister Keisha, she mentioned the idea of, instead of looking to build a business from the ground up, if you realize that businesses around you don't fall into the socially conscious category, something that happens on the regular, is businesses are taken over. Businesses are purchased and set on a different course. You know, there are people who, if they don't like the way a company is being run, they organize themselves or they come together with another group and they'll purchase that business. I know of a group right now that's talking about purchasing a dry cleaning facility, you know, together as a collective, as a group. Everybody's had at least one problem where they go to a place and put their item or their garment in for dry cleaning and you come back and you notice there's still a stain or now a button is missing or whatever the problem may be. If you don't like the way a company is doing something, another option that we really should think about in terms of wealth building, in terms of creating the type of businesses that we want in our community that will in turn spend money back with the community, is purchase existing businesses. That goes back to that whole conversation about a community of our own, owning, taking responsibility for what's there. That's an option that we generally don't think about, but actually purchasing existing businesses are, in some cases, a much easier way to get started and to get in the game and put a building block in place for that economic infrastructure that we know our community is really going to need. So we have about 8 minutes left, and we have one caller that's on the line that I want to bring in. There's a caller from 973 area code. Your microphone is open. Who's this? Caller from 973. I see
you. Good evening, brothers, sisters. Can I be heard?
Good evening. Yes, indeed. Peace and blessings to you.
Peace and blessings to you all. It's so strange these days, brother. I think what we need to do is it's so hard to find people who have a black first philosophy nowadays, and it's almost as if you're saying something evil when you bring the broach the subject. I think we need an association of black first organizations, because we really have to seek each other out so we can network. You know what I mean? When we say we have to be clear who we is, because, see, too many of our people are not with the program of Black First or Original People First program. Too many of us are assimilation in our mindset, assimilationists. Mm. And that's going to be a stumbling block when you try to organize with people with that philosophy. So I think, like, we really need to clarify who we are, because to me, we are people who want to put our own people first and feed our babies, you know. We're not interested in feeding other people's children unless there's something that we can have left after we've fed ourselves. But I just don't, you know, I think we really need to reach out and create networks of people who have this philosophy, and then we can move forward.
Got about it. You know, brother, I'm so glad that I keep getting confirmation of the same message everywhere I turn now.
Yes.
You know, Claude Anderson, I say it every time I get on, Claude Anderson has been saying, we don't have a community. You know, in order to have a community, you have to know who that community is, where they live, you know, who's around you. Everything that you would depend on a community for, you need to be able to point, just like you would point your finger on the spot on the map. You need to be able to know exactly who to go to and where to get the problem solved. But if what you call your community, if it's what you call we, is scattered and dispersed and all over the place, then your base is gone, your power base is gone. So you're hitting the nail right on the head, finding like-minded individuals who, I think a critical piece of it is, who are going to be in close physical proximity to one another.
Well, I would say that close proximity is the goal, but I would like to think of, instead of communities, I would like to think of networks. If we focus on networks now, we can be dispersed. Once we connect with each other, then we can plan communities where we will be together in one community, or we'll have like an Africa town in every large city. There will be an Africa town or Rosewood. where, you know, we can turn it into a tourist attraction even, because we are a people who are gifted. We have gifts and we have abilities, and we would attract people to these areas, and we would make money. You know, people will come to these, just like Harlem was, you know. I say was because Harlem is totally gentrified now.
Right.
But, you know, we could create these hubs of activity and culture where people from all over the world will come in to visit and see what we're doing. But networks come first. We got to connect the dots, connect these dots. And once we connect these dots, then we can plan communities where we will choose to migrate together in certain areas.
Excellent point. Excellent point.
Yes, brother.
Thank you much, my brother. I appreciate you
weighing
in on that.
Thank
you,
brother.
We got a couple of minutes left.
Keep up the work.
Yes, indeed. We got a couple of minutes left. I want to make sure that we wrap it up and let you know what we have coming up for the remainder of the week, since we're about to start a new week. Brother Jihad was on with us. I appreciate him coming on Tuesday night. We're going to make sure that we're right back here with the On the Front Line with the Fruit of Islam show. And my favorite segment on that show is the Boots on the Ground segment, where we find out exactly what's going on in communities across this country by good brothers who are out there doing the work of making a difference in the lives of people in our communities and in these urban centers all over the country. So be on the lookout for that. That's Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, pardon me, 9 p.m. Eastern. Sister Gidget, I know that you have your show on Thursday. What you got lined up for Thursday?
Well, this Thursday, we're going to change it up a little bit, and we're going to be discussing the mother plane with Sister Michelle Darlene Muhammad and Brother Philip Muhammad, who have done very extensive research throughout the years, and they are going to enlighten us and educate us on the mother plane. So several people have asked me to cover that topic before, and I was, you know, kind of uncomfortable, but what I did, I went out and found some people that were very abreast on the issue, and so that'll be 8 o'clock Central Time this Thursday.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Tune in on Thursday for Sister Gigi's show. And
oh, I'm sorry. Can I make one more announcement, please? I'm sorry. Also, we have a new show coming up that I've been working on, and we have Brother Arvance, and we want to welcome him and Brother Edmund X to the Nation Builder Network, and they are going to be the host of the show Young, Gifted, and Black. So they have some beautiful, wonderful music that they're promoting and putting out there, and so I want people to look for that show in December.
All right. All right, good stuff on the horizon. I appreciate that, good sister. And as you know, we'll be right back here again next Sunday with the No Romance Without Finance show. And I will let you know what the topic is as we get closer to that. So look out. Make sure you tune in and stay connected to us on the Nation Building Network, which is right there on Facebook. We have a very active and vibrant community, Nation Building, for families, communities, and strong marriages. Did I get that right, Sister Gidget? I feel like I'm always leaving something out.
Yeah, me too. You're good enough. That's good enough.
There's always some vital ingredient in there that I seem to overlook.
It's nation building strong, families, communities, and marriages.
Building strong families, communities, and marriages. There you go. That's the key component right there. Thank you for correcting me, good sister.
No problem, sir.
That is the end of our episode tonight. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Make sure that you visit one of the socially responsible businesses that we highlighted tonight, freedompapercompany.com, www.freedompapercompany.com. Take a look for yourself, see what's there, and show your support. So thank you. Have a good night, and may the good Lord bless you. Assalamu alaikum.
Valet and Salon Talk.